The King of Spain faces an angry public.
Protesters call Spain's King Felipe and the royal family murderers while pelting him with mud and other objects.
American officials warn of possible election interference.
Recent fake videos on social media purporting to show ripped up ballots in Pennsylvania and immigrants claiming to vote multiple times in Georgia are the work of Russian influence actors.
And who votes for whom?
Really what we're seeing is college-educated women are leaning very heavily towards Harris and Democrats, while men without college degrees, kind of the blue-collar folks, are leaning much more heavily towards Trump and Vance.
Today is Monday, November 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. We begin in the Middle East, where following last week's optimism of a ceasefire deal between Israel and Hezbollah, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Sunday that Hezbollah must be pushed back beyond the Litani River with or without a ceasefire deal, and that Hezbollah must be prevented from rearming. Netanyahu says that with or without an agreement, the key to returning peace and security in the north, the key to returning our evacuated residents in the north safely to their homes, is to push Hezbollah back beyond the Litani River, to strike any attempt by it to rearm, and thirdly, to respond forcefully against any action against us. The Litani River is roughly 30 kilometers inside Lebanon from the border with Israel. Fighting has escalated between Israeli forces and the Lebanese-based Hezbollah group since September, and hopes that a U.S. push for a ceasefire deal have faded. The health ministry said on Friday that Israeli attacks have killed at least 2,897 people and injured more than 13,000 in Lebanon. Spain's government reports more than 200 dead and dozens still missing following the deadliest flash floods in that country's modern history. Locals say they feel abandoned by their government. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has that story.
Protesters call Spain's King Felipe and the royal family murderers while pelting him with mud and other objects. This after what locals call botched and slow alerts once their government learned of the dangers of impending catastrophic flooding to the country's Valencia region, where mobile alerts sounded 2 hours too late. Coupled with what they call a slow response by emergency services, these became the deadliest flash floods in Spain's recent history, claiming more than 200 lives. Spain's prime minister said Saturday the government was sending 5,000 more troops to join the 2,500 already deployed for search, rescue, and cleanup operations. He added plans to seek assistance from the European Union's Solidarity Fund. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez speaking on National Pool as provided by the Associated Press.
I am aware that the responses that is being given is not enough. I know that there are severe problems and shortages, that there are collapsed services, municipalities buried in mud, desperate people looking for relatives, and homes destroyed and buried by mud. I know we have to do better and that we have to give our all, but I also know that we have to do it together.
Spanish police released aerial videos showing the widespread destruction of storms that dumped more rain in 8 hours than the preceding 20 months. When waters receded, locals saw their homes destroyed, many packed with mud and cars stacked atop one another in the streets. Climate scientists say such extreme weather events will only increase as climate change worsens. World Meteorological Organization media officer Claire Nullis on UNTV as provided by the AP.
Spain has been hit by absolutely catastrophic flooding. So if you can, you know, imagine a watering can, you turn the nozzle, you get a shower, you remove the nozzle, you get a heavier downpour, you take a bucket and it comes down on you, you know, torrentially. And this is what has been happening this week in Spain.
By Saturday, thousands of volunteers arrived outside Valencia's iconic City of Arts and Science complex. They traveled by bus to join those already taking part in cleanup efforts in areas where nearly a week after floods struck, many people still don't have access to clean drinking water. All while national police wade through shoulder-high water in search of those still missing. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
And in the United States, Tuesday's presidential election is shaping up to be unlike any the country has seen before. Security and intelligence officials warn that voters are facing a heightened and dynamic threat environment, with dangers coming from both home and abroad. VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Selden has more.
With early voting underway, a nightmare scenario for election officials. Ballots in Washington State and Oregon literally going up in smoke. Portland Police Bureau spokesperson Mike Benner.
Our officers quickly determined that there was an incendiary device that had been attached to the ballot box, and that is what ignited this fire.
And officials are not ruling out the possibility of more trouble, with more voters expected to cast ballots in person on Election Day. The message, though, from top election security officials like Jen Easterly with the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency is trying not to worry.
Despite the fact that the threat environment has never been more complex, election infrastructure has never been more secure, and the election stakeholder community has never been better prepared.
Since January of last year, federal, state, and local officials have done more than 1,300 physical security assessments, in addition to numerous exercises to prepare for almost any contingency. Andrew Boreen, Executive Director for Global Security at Flashpoint.
State and local election officials are looking at past cases of concern, learning from them, and that training and enablement across places like police departments, public safety officials, and awareness, I think, will also be helpful to reduce any likelihood of violence.
Still, U.S. intelligence agencies say the threat remains. U.S. officials warn that the main foreign threats are what they call the Big Three: Russia, Iran, and China. They say Russian efforts are aimed at seeing former President Donald Trump return to the White House. Iran is seeking to hurt Trump and help Vice President Kamala Harris, seeing her as a lesser threat. U.S. intelligence has determined China has been mostly focused on congressional races. Tech giant Microsoft confirming Chinese cyber actors have repeatedly targeted several Republican lawmakers who have been critical of Beijing. And some of the efforts seem bent on inspiring chaos. One declassified U.S. intelligence assessment warns Russia has plans to incite violence, and Iran may try to foment violence as well. Russia, Iran, and China have repeatedly denied such allegations, but the U.S. says it has proof, saying recent fake videos on social media purporting to show ripped-up ballots in Pennsylvania and immigrants claiming to vote multiple times in Georgia are the work of Russian influence actors. The videos have caused a stir. Whether they're changing minds, that's harder to say. Brian Liston is a senior threat intelligence analyst for Recorded Futures in SICT Group.
The successfulness, I would say, is quite small. We have not really seen these videos or this content break out beyond social media or on Telegram.
For now, U.S. election and security officials are asking voters to tune out the noise of mis- and disinformation, trying to assure them they can trust the election process and the results. Jeff Selden, VOA News, Washington.
And here are some other stories we're following from around the world. At least four people are injured after a Russian-guided bomb attack on a supermarket in Kharkiv, Ukraine's second-largest city. Donald Trump gave a profane and conspiracy-laden speech just 2 days before the presidential election, talking about reporters being shot and suggesting he shouldn't have left the White House after his 2020 election loss to Joe Biden. The former president repeatedly cast doubt on the integrity of the election and resurrected old grievances about being prosecuted after trying to overturn his defeat 4 years ago. Trump intensified his verbal attacks against his opponents and at one point suggested violence against members of the press. Some health officials say mpox cases in Congo appear to be stabilizing, a possible sign that the epidemic might be on the decline, but the UN Health Agency also acknowledged that only 40 to 50% of suspected infections in Congo were being tested, and that the virus is continuing to spread in other parts of the country, as well as Uganda. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Karish. Our dive into the U.S. presidential election deepens. North Carolina is one of seven so-called swing states that could determine the next U.S. president. Kamala Harris, Donald Trump, and their surrogates have spent a lot of time campaigning there. Black Americans make up 22% of the population, and those voters could decide who gets North Carolina's electoral votes. Rafael Sakoff has the story, narrated for us today by Anna Rice.
In the days leading up to Election Day, former Democratic President Barack Obama came to North Carolina to campaign for Democratic candidate Kamala Harris. He won this state in 2008 and wants to ensure it goes to Harris this election cycle.
I am here for a very important reason, and that is to ask you to vote. For your next governor, Jeff Stein. And for the next president of the United States of America, Kamala Harris.
Charlotte, North Carolina's largest city, has favored Democratic candidates in the last five presidential elections. More than one-third of the city's residents are African American, but they're not all interested in the same things as they prepare to vote.
My main issues are, of course, like the rights of women to have jurisdiction over their own bodies, rights pertaining to sexuality, LGBTQIA populations, as well as just people's rights in general. So I think like some concerning things for me always, of course, like as African-American women are the way that my people's rights are protected.
Making sure that underclass is also taken care of. You know, there's a lot going on where you want to raise taxes and, you know, you want to make sure different police officers are not getting, you know, penalized for what they're doing to African-American young men, and it's not fair.
What's very important, the cost of living is very important to me. Just the way we live, you know, making it more affordable for us Americans.
At the Democratic Party office of Mecklenburg County, located in Charlotte, staff told VOA that as of October 24th, about 31% of African-American voters had already cast their ballots. According to Leah Smart, senior organizer with the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party, she has spoken with Black voters who have voted for both candidates.
Some people feel that their vote is taken for granted and it's not appreciated. They want the way that they think it should be. They're not sought after the way they think it should be. And I know a lot of our work here in MEC is trying to fix that.
The Charlotte Republican Party office declined VOA's request for an interview. But Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance was recently here with an appeal to Black Christians.
In some ways, this election is fundamentally about whether Christians are going to be allowed to live our faith, whether Christians are going to be allowed to advocate for our principles, and whether Christians are going to be able to raise our children and build communities that are consistent with our values.
Getting Black voters to vote Republican has been historically difficult. Trump won only 8% of the Black vote in 2020, but some polls show him making gains. And the religious message resonates with some Black voters in North Carolina, who overwhelmingly identify as Protestant or Evangelical Christians.
Just the nature of the people in North Carolina. It's always been, as far as a Bible Belt, he goes by the Bible in a lot of ways, as far as the beliefs of the Bible.
Obama, in turn, when speaking in Charlotte, emphasized that no president can fully eradicate racism or solve all problems. But politics, depending on whom people choose, can make lives better or worse. For Rafael Saakov in Charlotte, North Carolina, Anna Rice, VOA News.
As the election nears, pollsters are frantically trying to figure out which types of people will gravitate to which candidate, or trying to figure out what type of messaging will attract and inspire people to vote for their candidate. Recently, the New York Times published an opinion piece co-authored by two pollsters about the breakdown of voters in the presidential election. Amanda Iovino is a Republican pollster with the firm WPA Intelligence, and she's one of those authors.
Well, Celinda Lake, a Democratic pollster, and I, we found that there's really a divergence among voters by gender, and especially when you add education into the divide. Really what we're seeing is college-educated women are leaning very heavily towards Harris and Democrats, while men without college degrees, kind of the blue-collar folks, are leaning much more heavily towards Trump and Vance.
So if we take education out for just a second, is it true that more broadly women are favoring Harris and men are favoring Trump?
It is true. We're seeing gender gap data all over the place. But when we kind of dig into the crosstabs a little bit more, once you break out that education divide, everything just kind of shoots to one end of the spectrum or the other. So what you're winding up with is college-educated women as the Democratic base, non-college men as Republican base, and then you've got college-educated men and women without college degrees are kind of the swing voters in this election.
So what are the possible reasons for that?
So some of it is, you know, Trump's rhetoric, kind of the language that Trump uses and that Vance uses, the campaigns are using kind of up and down the ballot, are really appealing towards those blue-collar men. And the reverse for Harris, abortion rights play up much more strongly with college-educated women, for whom the economy's kind of doing okay. Voters with college degrees, they have very low rates of unemployment. They're not really feeling the effects of inflation the past few years in the way that voters without college degrees have related.
There's something in Trump's populist message that's appealing to those with less education.
Absolutely. Really his economic message. And we saw this in 2016 to a lesser extent in 2020. Trump's populist message really rings home for those men without college degrees and voters without college degrees generally. But really we're seeing this year kind of the tone. It's much more masculine driven. It's not just the policy, but it's also the delivery. In the same way that college educated women are liking Harris's policies, again, specifically on abortion, but they also like the way that she's talking about the issues.
You touched on something else. You mentioned 2016 when Trump was running against Hillary Clinton, another woman. Are the same divides among gender and education present there, or have they been exacerbated since then?
They've been exacerbated since then, and part of the reason is in the last 8 years, there's been a lessening extent of race playing in a part in this whole mix. Trump 2024 is much more appealing to Hispanic men, and it's also appealing to some Black men. So that gender divide is going to get wider because they're leaning more onto the gender side as opposed to just appealing to white men.
So I understand you're a pollster. You ask questions and you sift through the data. We've been hearing a lot about undecided voters lately. And I'm wondering if you can tell us who they are, who, with all that's going on in the world and in the news, who is it that hasn't yet made up their mind? Who doesn't know who they're going to vote for on Tuesday?
I'm always hesitant to say that there are voters who are truly undecided, and it's just the ones that are telling us that they're undecided. There are voters who see either positives in both candidates or more often than not negatives in both candidates. And it's going to be a hold your nose, which one do I hate less when I walk into the voting booth? Those kind of double haters. We talked a lot more about them when it was going to be Trump-Biden, but they're still present when it's Trump-Harris.
So you mentioned that with non-college educated men, they're not seeing as many of the benefits to the economy or the benefits in the economy that college educated women are seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true the other way around? Non-college educated women, are they also voting for Trump?
So they are much more of a swing group, non-college women, because they have those economic pressures that non-college men have, where a lot of the time in the last few years with inflation going up you know, it's deciding between putting food on the table and gas in the car, especially at the peak of inflation. That's really driving some of those non-college men to vote for Trump. But for non-college women, it's also divided because they are also caring about abortion. So it mitigates kind of the economic pressures a little bit. And we'll see on Tuesday quite how much those two balance out for that group.
My last question for you. Now, I understand you are a Republican pollster. You've worked on Republican campaigns before. The election is just days away. If you had one thing to say to each campaign to help them win, what would it be?
I think for both of them, it's just closing out with the message that has gotten them this far. All of the polls show that this is a extraordinarily tight race in a lot of battlegrounds and in potentially new battlegrounds that are popping up every day. And this is what got them there. Authenticity is really what matters to voters at the end of the day.
And we'll have to leave it there. Amanda Iovino is a pollster with WPA Intelligence, and she's a co-author of the recent op-ed in the New York Times. Ms. Iovino, thanks for your time. Thanks for your analysis with us.
Thanks so much.
Meanwhile, in other election news, Moldova's pro-Western president, Maia Sandu, has won a second term in a pivotal presidential runoff against a pro-Russia opponent in a race that was overshadowed by claims of Russian interference, voter fraud, and intimidation. With nearly 99% of votes counted in the second run of the presidential election held Sunday, Sandu had 55% of the vote, this according to the Central Election Commission, or CEC, compared to 45% for Alexander Stoyanoglo, a former prosecutor general who is backed by the pro-Russia Party of Socialists. The result will be a major relief for the pro-Western government, which strongly backed Sandu's candidacy and her push for closer Western ties on Moldova's path toward the EU. Earlier in the first round of voting, there had already been accusations of election interference by Moscow, and there were more on Sunday. Reuters' Diane Toh reports.
A Moldovan security official accused Russia on Sunday of massive interference as voters cast their ballots in a tight presidential race. It's a runoff election that could see Moscow claw back influence in a country drawing closer to the European Union. Pro-Western incumbent Maia Sandu spoke of defending the country's sovereignty after voting in the capital, Chisinau. Thieves want to buy our voices, buy our country, but the power of the people is much greater than the power of evil, she said. Her pro-Moscow opponent, Alexander Stoyanoglo, said he voted for a Moldova that will develop good ties with both the West and the East. Brussels is closely watching the election after Sandu set Moldova on the long path of EU accession talks in June. It comes a week after Georgia, another ex-Soviet state seeking EU membership, re-elected a ruling party regarded in the West as increasingly pro-Russian. Moldova's future has been in the spotlight since Russia began its full-scale invasion in 2022 of neighboring Ukraine to the east. On Sunday, Sandu's national security advisor Stanislav Sekrieru wrote on social media accusing Moscow of interfering in the election, warning it was, quote, an effort with high potential to distort the outcome. Sekrieru cited reports of Moldovans being transported to vote in an organized and illegal way from a pro-Moscow breakaway region where Russia has soldiers stationed as peacekeepers. There was no immediate comment from Moscow, which has denied past allegations of meddling. The Moldova government has also accused Ilan Shor, a fugitive oligarch living in Russia, of spending millions of dollars to pay off voters to oppose Sandu. It's said the meddling affected the election's first-round results on October 20th. Shor has denied wrongdoing.
That's Reuters' Diane Toh reporting for us. And that's going to wrap it up for us today. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. From Washington, I'm Steve Karish. ¶¶